the John Paul II Medical Research Institute as good and moral adult stem cell alternatives for your support. For pro-life headlines delivered to your email address daily, sign up at lifenews.com. This has been Life News Radio.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Welcome back. My guest in this hour is a good friend, longtime friend, and a nationally known speaker, writer, Catholic guy around town, Jeff Cavins. Jeff, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Deal.
Now, Jeff, do you mind if I laud you a little bit before we start talking?
No problem.
Okay. Jeff has just been appointed the Director of Evangelization for the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minnesota, or Minneapolis. And that's one reason I brought him on the show to discuss that. But Jeff Cavins is well known from his Great Adventure Bible Study series published by Ascension, his Bible Timeline, The Story of Salvation, and other Bible series that include individual studies of Matthew, Acts, Revelation, Psalms, and James. There are over 5,000 groups using these studies in the U.S. and around the world. He and his wife Emily also lead pilgrimages to the Holy Land and other places, to Rome, Vatican. We'll talk about that, too, in a little bit. You may remember when he founded EWTN's weekly program, Life on the Rock, or the relevant radio daily show, Morning Air. Naturally, Jeff has many books. I'll just mention this one because it's got a great title. My Life on the Rock, A Rebel Returns to the Catholic Faith, and I'm Not Being Fed, The Food That Satisfies the Soul. Jeff and his wife, Emily, and their daughters live in Minnesota. Are you a native Minnesotan?
Well, I was born in Iowa, the first 5 years in Iowa. Well, my father got his doctorate in electrical engineering, and then we moved up to Minnesota when I was about 5 years old, and from the rest, yeah. You betcha.
They still call that the Land of the Thousand Lakes?
Well, the license plate says 10,000.
Oh, 10,000. You know, I actually spent 2 years as a young boy ice skating all over Minneapolis, but that was a long time ago. Jeff, wow. when I read that you had been appointed as Director of Evangelization in your archdiocese, that is, in St. Paul, Minneapolis, for me, it was a very significant event, a very hopeful event. And I want you to talk a little bit about how this came about, but let me tell you why I think it's significant. If you recall, in the beginning, EWTN didn't have the greatest reputation among some parts of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, some of the personalities and leaders that came out of EWTN, including yourself, were sort of identified with that. And, of course, there were always bishops who welcomed what Mother was doing and welcomed what you were doing and so forth. But there was significant resistance to, in some quarters, to what EWTN represented. Now, thankfully, that's been overcome. But all of a sudden, one of these EWTN guys, and I'm not saying that you're still, you know, part of all that, but you'd certainly got some of your start there, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. You are now going into Archdiocese Chancery and working from the inside. And I think it's great that they have welcomed you there and that you want to be there. And I think that's why I think it's a very hopeful step. How did this happen?
Well, it's a little bit of a story. I'd be happy to share it with you. This is actually the first time that I've really told the story.
Good, thank you.
It is fairly recent. You know, like you said, for the last 20 years or so, I've been involved in affecting change in the church from, I would say, from the feet and the hands inward, and developing Bible studies and faith formation series that parishes can elect to use, and they put them on. And as you said, over 5,000 parishes have have been involved in the.
That's a lot of people, studies. Jeff. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we got a great team. You know, it's as you know, any apostolate that really is effective, there's more than one person responsible, and we do have a good team. And it's about a third of the parishes in the country. And I think that the secret to that was that that I stumbled upon, and I'll say stumbled upon, because years ago, as a young pastor outside of the church, I just simply wanted to understand the Bible. And I created that Bible timeline chart really for myself, and then later understood that other people, they also had those questions, and they wanted
to know. What kind of pastor were you? I forgot.
A good one.
Oh, come on. What denomination?
I was. I started off with the Assembly of God, although I wasn't ordained with the Assembly of God, mm-hmm. an open Bible standard, and then it went into a group of pastors that were ordained under an independent organization mm-hmm. that were typically independent charismatic churches.
Well, you may remember I was a Southern Baptist pastor. That's why I feel like I have the right to ask you that. So keep going.
So you know, when we developed that Bible timeline chart, we stumbled upon making the complex simple, and that caught on. And over the years, we've been continuing with that. But I also started noticing something that frankly was bothering me, and that was that I would go to church on Sunday, and there almost started to develop this attitude among, I guess you would say, the lay faithful that. That you have the church proper, and that is the local parish with the pastor and the DRE and the youth minister.
RCIA and all that, yeah.
All of that. That's one part of the church. But almost this attitude on some people's part of, but we're really doing the work over here. And that's typically parachurch organizations.
Or that's kind of what I was alluding to in my introduction.
Yeah. And I have to admit that even unconsciously I might have participated in that, and that was
me too. I admit it.
We're not really going to experience these things in the structure of the church and the institutional church. You know, that we're going to have to go outside of it and grassroots. And so I kind of carried that attitude around, not consciously, but I think it's there.
But to defend you and me. You know, 20 years ago, there were a lot fewer people in the institutional church that liked what we were doing.
I agree. Yeah.
It's just gone in a direction that's more welcoming of an evangelical style of witness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that over these years, I've probably observed a number of things. One of them was that the pastors are incredibly busy, and they're very busy with things that they didn't learn in seminary, and they go from meeting to meeting.
You mean like how to raise money?
Yeah, and how to
budget,
for the faith
how to
school.
how to fix the roof.
Yeah, yep. All of
how to things. How to keep the parking lot paved.
Yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
And so they're very very busy, and I started to notice. Two, that, you know, a lot of the DREs were basically plugging holes, and that was that they were just looking for what the neighbor was using, and what are you guys using for the young adult? What are you using for adult catechesis?
Well, we're using Christ Among Us. We think it's great.
Yeah. we put the programs in there and kind of nurse them along, and it's more like babysitting in some cases where we're just going to have a program and we've got, you know, 50 people that come to it, and we're going to call it a day, even though they might have a church of 3,200 families. So I started noticing that the description of success was actually quite low. And I started to think to myself, why is it that we don't experience tremendous growth every year? And I'll tell you the one day of the year that made me think for the last 5 years, and that was the Easter Vigil. And the Easter Vigil has shaken me over the last 5 years. And I'll tell you
really?
What. Yeah, it's shaken me in that here I am, I'm part of a church that has 3,200 families. And on the Easter Vigil, we might have 4 people joining this church. The next year, 5. 3 of them married into the church, 1 read an apologetics book and decided to become Catholic, and the other two are not quite sure exactly what's going on, but they know that they want this. And so these numbers were really, really low, and it kind of bothered me.
We almost call that undetectable in the world of statistics.
Yeah, and I started thinking to myself, if this was a corporation, if this was some business, and
everybody would be fired.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And I started to say that to a few of my, you know, priest friends. I said, you know, in corporate America, this just wouldn't fly. And I realized how busy they were. And so I guess I'm saying that I don't want to be overcritical of.
I'm going to do something about it.
Well, that's exactly what happened, and I'll tell you when it happened. It happened this last year. As you know, the week after Christ the King Sunday, which is the end of our liturgical year, the week after that, the RCIA candidates are invited to stand up in front of the church for the first time for that year. Now, they're going to go through about 30 to 40 weeks of training and teaching and formation before they stand up on the Easter Vigil. Well, in the church that I was in, on that week after Christ the King, they said, would the RCI candidates please stand and come forward? Deal, I kid you not, one person stood up.
Oh, that's so sad.
One person stood up, and it hit me like a bolt of lightning.
Right.
And I leaned over to my wife, and I said, honey, we can do something about this.
We can do better.
We can do something about this.
Right.
And I said, you know, that the people don't know how this works. They don't know. You know, they don't, and this is part of, I guess, you know, perhaps our next discussion here, and that is, you know, how do we witness and so forth? And the many Catholics that I know of, even those deal that have gone through the Bible studies, which, praise God for that. Those that have gone through theology of the body classes, praise God for that. Those that understand Vatican II documents, praise God for that. What I found was that they didn't know how to invite people to Christ, and they didn't know how to invite people to church. I mean,
maybe that's because they didn't even think about doing it in the first place.
That's part of it right there. You nailed it. And that's part of it, is that how can they do something that's not part of their worldview or their daily thinking?
Now, what I want to say right now before we move deeper into this is that to be evangelical is to have a disposition to be evangelical. In other words, it's part of you. It's part of your habit of thinking, feeling. It's your worldview. In other words, you are always at the ready to share your faith.
Right. Right.
And I don't find that among Catholics in America. I really don't. I've been a Catholic now 30 years, and it just ain't there.
I think you're right. I think you're right. What I am seeing, though, is that it can change. When I said to my wife on that Sunday, we can do something about this, here's what was going through my mind. Why should I sit on the outside and create great, you know, programs, which I think the Bible Timeline is the best Bible study in the world, you know, why should I stand on the outside and be internally critical of, quote-unquote, the institutional church, and stand and watch my brothers and sisters struggling? Why? How can I do that when I truly believe that with a dynamic walk with the Lord, as you would say, this evangelical Catholicism, we can affect change? And what I told someone just the other day was, they said, why are you doing this? You're going all over the country and you speak. Why would you suddenly focus on one archdiocese? And I said, because I have such a desire to go to the heart of the church.
Right.
To go to the heart of the church, to the middle of the heart where the blood pumps and where the...
Out of the chancery.
Exactly.
And out of the parish.
Yep. And I said, you know what? If I don't dare to do that, you know, who's going to? And so I...
Yeah, well, you are a perfect guy to lead the charge, I must say. I'm talking with Jeff Cavins, who is the newly appointed... the director of evangelization in the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis. How did it happen? Yeah.
Sure. Okay. I went out to lunch with one of the auxiliary bishops. We were talking about, I was the director of the Catechetical Institute at the seminary. And that thing has been very successful. We've already graduated over 600 students that go through two-year programs and learn the faith, great formation. And the archbishop that asked this auxiliary bishop to talk to me about how these graduates could affect education in the archdiocese. Well, about 15 minutes into the conversation, the bishop said, incidentally, we're going to be hiring a director of evangelization. Well, they've never had one before, and when he said it, deal is like a lightning bolt off in front of me, and I felt as if the Lord was saying, that's for you. And I didn't
absolutely
remember
what
the rest
timing
of the conversation. I don't remember it. I couldn't sleep, and I told my wife, I said, when he said it, I felt like the Lord put his hand on my shoulder and said, I'll be with you. This is for you.
Talk about a door opening, right?
Oh, you know what? We've had our share of problems in the archdiocese with some of the priest scandal, and I think that the morale is a bit low, you know, among some of the faithful. We got a beautiful new auxiliary bishop, and Bishop Andrew Cousins, part of the Companions of Christ, comes from a real spirit-filled background, just a
wonderful,
powerful one of the two youngest bishops in the country. But anyway, after talking to this other bishop, I went home and we prayed about it, and I went back about 3 weeks later to the bishop. I said, can I talk to you about that job you said you were posting? And he looked at me like, well, why are you interested in it? And I said, you caught my attention. I said, I would be interested in something like this if we could build it from ground up.
Right.
And really, really think innovatively, creatively, and as John Paul II said, with new methods and new ardor. And I said, I have to say respectfully, I'm really not interested in what has been done because, frankly, I don't think it's worked. I think we need to think differently here, and we need to get out of the box and really approach this from a different angle. And he said, well, we're interested. So we prayed about it some more, and then I said, you know what? I'm still discerning, but I'm going to put my hat in the ring. And I did. I got a call a few weeks later from Bishop Cousins, and he said, we're interested in talking to you. And we went in, and I explained to them a vision for evangelization that is different. And they liked it.
That's exciting. And you must have shined your shoes and found a tie.
Oh, man. Tie, yeah.
I'm talking with Jeff Cavins, who is well-known nationally as a speaker and writer, leader of pilgrimages to the Holy Land, to holy, sacred places all over the world. And he's going to work for the official church. He's going to work for an archbishop in St. Paul, Minneapolis. And by the way, if you want to know more about Jeff, go to jeffcavins.com. I mean, he's filled with information. For example, his upcoming pilgrimages to the Holy Land in January and to the Holy Land when Pope Francis goes in May. And Jeff's been over there so many times that he has great on-the-ground contacts. And whoever goes with him will definitely meet Palestinian Christians, will definitely be in places that other folks who've traveled long distance won't be able to get into. I've been there 6 times. I can tell you, I know that Jeff, it'll be a very special trip in May. And if you go to jeffcavins.com, you can find the information and contact Ian Emily and go on the trip. I urge you to. It'll be a historic occasion, won't it?
It will. It will. You know, we're going to be in Manger Square with Pope Francis, and he's celebrating Mass there. And the Manger Square only holds about 4,000 people.
That's right. It's not that big. It's about like a football field.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be really something. And you know what I appreciate about Pope Francis? He's going over there. He's targeting the disenfranchised.
Absolutely.
He's
Palestinian Christians,
exactly.
The Orthodox.
Yep. And he's going to go to Jordan, too. So it's going to be a historic moment. And we're going to be joining, our group is going to join some of the Palestinian Catholics over there who have really felt the pinch of some of the movements.
Well, you know that's an understatement, Jeff. You don't have to understate it.
Good heart.
You and I both know that the Palestinian Christians are feel besieged, and the whole younger generation is practically leaving the country to go to South America, America, and other places. And it's a sad situation. I sat with the three mayors, one of Bethlehem and Bitola, and the other town next to it, and they were talking about all their children who were born in those towns there around Bethlehem and around. They had all gone to other countries
right.
to live.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone without exception.
Right.
So let's talk about, because you and I could talk about the Holy Land for a long, long time and mm-hmm. get about as far as John Kerry did. You said that you put forth a kind of new vision of evangelization. Can you summarize a little bit of that for us?
Sure. You know, when you look at evangelization, first of all, you have to dispel what we think it is, and we have to lay down in concrete terms what it is. Evangelization is not necessarily just standing on a street corner and proclaiming some gospel, but evangelization is all about introducing people to Jesus Christ, and introducing people to Jesus Christ in such a way that he's understood, and that he's accessible, and that it's doable, and that you understand who he is and about his movement, the kingdom of God, what that movement entails, what it requires of you, and what you get out of it, you know, both here and in eternity. It's a complete program. But evangelization is about developing opportunities for individuals and parishes to encounter Christ and to bring the message of the kingdom to other people in an attractive way, in a real way, and in a way where people can accept that and do it. And so one of the things that I started to notice is the progression. There's a progression to growth from someone who simply doesn't know God, or someone who's part of the sleeping giant, and that is they've been going to church, to Mass for years, but the truth of the matter is they really don't have a relationship with
God. They don't connect with it. It's not an affective relationship.
No. And to use very personal terms, it's not a personal relationship.
Yeah.
It's a dutiful
exercise.
Yes. Yes.
Which, and by the way, I'm not putting that down.
No, it's pretty true, and it's actually admirable
yeah.
in that people keep coming back. But if you actually inquire as to what they know, or what they're experiencing, or what the Mass is about, you'll find that they really don't. But there's a hunger in the heart that keeps bringing them back. A sense of we should brings them back, and I thank God for that. I think that's a testament as to how powerful the Mass is in drawing people, and there's something that is happening in their heart, you know, when they do return. But when we think about the evangelization, the new evangelization, we're talking about targeting people who do not know God, they're not in covenant relationship with God, and those who are Catholic, but they need an awakening, they need some new direction and some new dynamism in their life.
I'm talking with Jeff Cavins about his position as director of evangelization in the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minnesota. Now I gotta play devil's advocate, Jeff. I just got to, because you know as well as I do. We only got 3 minutes left in the segment. There is so much internal resistance among cradle Catholics to even the word evangelism, but certainly the style, technique, emotionality that evangelical Christianity represents. How are you going to get past that?
Well, I think that you're right in that they kind of believe that evangelicals own that straightforward evangelism message, you know, of talking to someone. I think that the way that we get around that is we start talking about real relationships and real conversation about issues that people are facing in their life. You know, one of the things that we have to do in evangelization, there's four segments that I would highlight. The first is pre-evangelization. And pre-evangelization is simply gaining the right to be heard.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's introducing the topic in a way
that's
that
excellent.
That piques the interest.
It's crucial.
Yeah.
And by the way, evangelical Protestants do that, and they don't call it that, but they do it.
Right, exactly, they do. They know that there needs to be some pre-evangelization, and we need a relationship here. And sometimes, you know, what that takes is just listening to someone.
Right.
And listening specifically to the pain in their life, to the angst.
Right.
Listening to what they are currently recording Dr. Phil for, and Oprah, and Rush Limbaugh, and Dr. Oz, and Ellen. People are watching these shows for reasons, and they are not hoping to record an 8-part series on the saints of the 14th century. They are looking for answers to real life problems, and I think that pre-evangelization is part of the mix in that I need to know where people are hurting.
They're not looking for displays of piety.
Not at all. Not even slightly.
Yeah.
Not even on the radar.
They're looking for answers to questions from persons who care about them.
Right. You know, and when we come back from the break, I'll talk to you about how our current methodology actually misses the point here and how we need to begin with pre-evangelization. And so we need to come up with some dynamic, innovative ways of capturing the attention of hurting people who right now are looking for answers. But we don't understand them, and we're not providing the answers that Jesus Christ gives.
It doesn't occur to me that I've ever heard anybody put the label on it that you did, pre-evangelization. I think that's really smart. Because sometimes when Catholics try to evangelize, they just skip over that.
You're exactly right. They do. And what they want to do is they want to get to a decision real quick. You know, that I'm going to tell you about God, and I want a decision from you rather than taking the time to listen to them.
Yeah, that's because they're new at it. I'm talking with Jeff Cavins, who's the new director of evangelization at the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis. Very exciting new job for him, and good for the church, too. And we'll be back right after this message.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. All who have been involved in an abortion are invited to the next Rachel's Vineyard Retreat beginning Friday, September 5th at St. Mary's Retreat House in Oxford. Come experience God's rich mercy. To reserve your place, call 248-494-6363. Saturday, September 13th is the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Babies. Memorial services will take place in Detroit, Southfield, and Troy at the very graves of unborn babies killed by abortion. For times and exact locations, visit ProLifeSociety.com. That's ProLifeSociety.com. You can find many more events and enter your own events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077. Catholic Radio, it's yours to keep and to grow.
Mark your calendar for the first Friends of the Master golf outing on Friday, September 5th. Friends of the Master has been serving inmates and returning citizens since 2005. Join with us as we follow Christ's command to visit the prisoner and help with the difficult obstacles people face as they re-enter society from jail and prison. We will enjoy a beautiful day of fun and fellowship as we support a great cause. Join us Friday afternoon, September 5th, at Lake Forest Golf Club in Ann Arbor. For more information, please go to friendsofthemaster.org.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Jeff Cavins about evangelization, and he was telling us for the break that he's going into this job in the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis, with a kind of creative approach to how to teach evangelization to Catholics on the ground, how to really get it into parishes. And by the way, you were saying to me during the break, Jeff, that when you look at Catholic publishing, you don't really see much help at this point coming from that direction.
Well, I think that Catholic publishing is focused on one of the four key areas. The first step in evangelization is pre-evangelization. That is gaining the right to be heard, bringing up the critical topics, discussing it, giving cogent answers concerning those problems, and giving answers in such a way that people can see themselves doing it and entering into some kind of relationship with God. That moves you then onto the stage of evangelization. Evangelization is the encounter. One way or another, people are going to have to encounter Jesus Christ, whether that's in a book, whether that's in a study group, whether that's a Curcio weekend, or whether it's you and your buddy sitting over coffee at Denny's in the morning and talking about this man, Jesus Christ, and his kingdom. And eventually, and this is the hard part, I think, for a lot of Catholics, which comes easy for evangelicals and fundamentalists and charismatic Christians, is that sooner or later, you have to ask the question, do you want to follow him? Are you interested?
You have to ask for the business, as they say.
Exactly. If I met you, Deal, and we had been friends for 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 months, and after having coffee in the morning, sooner or later I'm going to get around to the point of, Deal, do you see the world the way Jesus sees the world? Do you want to walk with him? Do you want that transformation?
I think that's very hard for Catholics to do.
It is very hard, and I think one of the reasons is because they don't think typically about their own life that way on a daily
basis. Well, that's not how they came into the church themselves.
I know.
Even though the sacrament of confirmation is supposed to be something like that, is it not?
It is. It's supposed to be the completion of the sacrament of baptism, and it's supposed to give you power to be, as the Catechism says, an official witness of the church with power.
Supposedly, it's that moment when a young adult has reached a level of reasoning and personal freedom that he or she can confirm that this is a choice, not just something that's been handed down by the parents.
Right. Well, there comes that point of the actual evangelization, and that is the encounter with Jesus Christ. Now, here's the interesting thing. Once someone says yes, as I said, just a few weeks ago, the individual stood up, one person in a church, 3,200 families, stood up and said, you know what? I want to go forward. I want to be a disciple. I want to follow Jesus. At that point, that person was going to go into the RCIA program. But here's one of the problems, Deal, is what do you do with a person who says, I want to follow Jesus. I want this worldview. I want to live my life for the kingdom. And then someone says, well, good for you, but guess what? You need to wait 6 months now before the next class starts.
That is just absurd.
Who would think of giving birth to a child?
That is so absurd. Does that really happen, Jeff?
Well, sure. It happens all the time. You know, where you have to start at a certain time during the year. And what I'm saying is, why not plug that hole? Why not take newborns, those that are wanting to become Catholic in a sense, and saying to them, we're going to be with you throughout this process. You don't have to wait 6 months, but we want to be with you up until the beginning of that.
You got to fit into the rotation here. You got to fit into the calendar. I'm telling you, that is an introduction. If that's someone's introduction to the Catholic Church, then that's an introduction that defeats the purpose of the pre-evangelization.
Right. You have to have a nursery to bring them into, and to feed them, to nurture them, and to give them hope and example. So my thought is this, that from pre-evangelization on to evangelization, that once someone says, you know what, I do want to become Catholic, I do want to follow Jesus Christ, that the church is ready for that new life at that point until they can go through formation. And the third aspect to this movement is formation. We all need that formation, and that could be a Bible study, it could be a theology of the body study.
Maybe your Bible timeline study?
Yeah, it could be a number of different things. But here's what, and then we move on to the fourth step, which is discipleship, which is maturity, leadership, and they begin to bring people into this kingdom and to meet Jesus Christ.
They become ministers.
Here's one of the problems, though, Deal, is this, and you've seen this yourself among friends, and that is that we take people from a pre-evangelization stage, and that is we are talking about this. It is they're curious. And then we bypass the evangelization stage, which is the ask, or do you want to follow him? Can we hear an I do?
Because we fear it, because we're nervous about it. Yeah.
We skip it. We bring them to the formation class, and we hope that it's done. And here they are in the formation class, and suddenly we realize they never said I do.
Right.
They never said I want to follow him.
Kind of like a shotgun marriage.
That's what I was getting to, yeah.
I'm talking with Jeff Cavins, well known around the country for his Bible timeline series and his Bible study series, his many appearances on television and radio, and for his pilgrimage that he and his wife Emily lead regularly. The next one's going to be going to the Holy Land in January, and then in May back to the Holy Land, to Bethlehem, to be in Bethlehem Square in front of the Church of the Nativity when Pope Francis is there. All this can be found on his website, jeffcavins.com. Really nice website, by the way, along with lots of teaching and lots of, I would say, exciting opportunities. Jeff, so is this the program basically that you outlined to the Archdiocese?
It is. It is. It's a process of bringing new life into the church and nurturing that new life and informing it and growing. Excuse me. So that is the basic.
Now I'm sort of like, hey, I want in on this. That's the way I'm feeling right now. This is what I want in on this, because there is one thing I want you to promise me you will do, okay? And I know you do it, but I'll say it anyway. There are people out there that need different approaches, many different approaches at the pre-evangelization stage. And even at the stage of asking, they need to be asked differently. It can't be like the four spiritual laws. And I think that one thing that, well, in fact, some evangelical Protestants have the same problem. They only can speak in one way, with one tone of voice, with one set of words, with one kind of program. They can't be flexible enough to adjust to the person sitting across from them may know more about philosophy and theology than they do. May know more about the Bible than they do, may be interested in this aspect, say the existence of God, or this aspect, the saints, and you've got to be able to sort of be nimble enough to address what they're interested in, right?
Right. You mean in terms of talking to them, addressing where they're at, where they're
at? Yeah. Establishing the point of contact. So evangelization is, by its very nature, as much an art as it is a science. You have to adjust it to the individual you're in front of.
It is. You know, when you talk to people, as you know, there's only so many problems, so many points of pain and hurt in people's lives, but it displays itself in a plethora of ways. And you know, people are struggling with issues in their life, and part of evangelization is listening for the angst. It's listening for that pain, because people do talk about it. They start talking about where the struggle is or the pinch points in their life, and they will tell you. And the answer to all of these is Jesus Christ. And I think that you're right, that evangelization is really the art of tailoring that message to that particular
person. That's a better word than I was using, tailoring. That's good.
It's tailoring the message to that person's pain, to the questions that they have, and to the basic interests that they have. And in some ways, we have to believe in the providence of God, that out of the 7 or so billion people on earth, I happen to be interacting with these 4 or 5 today, And there must be something in common that we can, you know, that we can talk about. There's one aspect of this deal, though, that I think we underestimate. You're a man of the word. I mean, you have a background of preaching the word, teaching, and the Bible. There is this sense that I have to be really clever.
Yes, that's fair.
And I have to know everything, and to be able to talk at some sophisticated level. When I have found out that the basic message of Jesus Christ in his kingdom has a powerful effect on people. Now, there's a big fancy word for this. It's called the kerygma, you know,
right.
the kerygmatic message.
The proclamation of the dogma.
It's the basic message that is that I think if people want to be interested in evangelization, one of the first things they need to do is they do need to learn what is the basic proclamation of the gospel,
right?
Which is very simple: that God loves you, God has a plan, sin has got seriously in the way here, but Jesus Christ came and He has a solution to this, which requires a response from our part. And we will live with him, and we will become like him now and forever. And so there's a basic message. Now, that message doesn't come out the same with every person. It's what you were saying earlier, and that is being tailor-made and listening to them and starting to talk to them with this basic structure in mind when it comes to sharing the gospel with someone. I'll give you an example of this. A few weeks ago, I was down in Fort Myers, Florida. And I needed to take a cab. And I'll tell you what, evangelization is so easy. When you really start doing it, God just opens up doors. It really is fun. It really, really is fun to share Christ with people. And I got in the car, this taxi, and this guy's name was Todd. And all I did was I started off, said, Todd, are you from around here? He says, oh, no. He said, I'm from up in Wisconsin, Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
So you had it right there. You had it.
I said, I'm right at the border. I'm right across the border. He goes, I'm in Minneapolis. He goes, oh, I went over there all the time. You see, we've got something in common already.
Right.
And then I said to him, I said, well, you're from Wisconsin. I said, that's a big Lutheran country. Were you raised Lutheran? That's all I asked him. Now, this doesn't take a PhD.
No.
You know? I said, are you Lutheran? Oh, no. He says, no, I was Catholic.
Wow.
Another door opens.
Wow.
I said, you were. What do you mean you were? Oh, I'm not anymore. Another door opens. Why not? Yeah, this is all just done in
right. This is minutes. Just rolling.
Yeah. So I said, why not? People are okay with talking about these things.
They love talking about it.
He's probably been waiting to tell someone what.
Right. I mean, he doesn't want to talk about the weather.
So he said, well, I'm not Catholic anymore. And then he gave me the regular reasons, you know, that it's religion run by older men, and all they want is money and this and that and buildings. And I said, really? And so then I changed the topic to his basic need. And I said, well, Todd, now that you left the church, I got to ask you a question. Who are you looking to now for truth? That's it. That's all I asked him. He said,
which is a fair question.
Yeah. I mean, where's North? Where's North in your life?
Right.
And he said,
which star are you following?
Uh-huh. He said, well, that's a good question. this is all in 3 minutes. It's in
wonderful.
3 minutes. And it was no theology, no Greek, no Latin,
right.
Nothing.
Right.
And he's just using regular terms. Where's that in your life, Pat? As he's looking, we're looking at the beach and everything, he said, well, that's a good question. He said, I guess just a lot of books and certain teachers and... And I said, really? And I said, well, you left the church. I said, I got to ask you, where does Jesus fit into all this now? Simple question.
Right.
He said, well, I guess he's part of it. So he
wasn't offended, and he wasn't upset asked the question.
Not at all. He was engaged.
Right.
He was totally engaged. He didn't know that I was a writer, Bible teacher, or anything.
He just knew you had a weird beard. That's all he knew.
Getting grayer, by the way. So we ended up talking, and I finally, after he revealed that, yes, I am the same man I've always been, I have a need for God. He started to admit this, I have a need for God. And I did leave the church, but I kind of consider myself Catholic. I just did the ask. I said, Todd, I said, you know what? I don't believe that your life's an accident. Do you? He said, no. I said, I don't either. I think we met for a reason today. And you know why? I said, I think I'm here to invite you back home.
Wow. This is like 10 minutes, right?
This is 10 minutes. Yep. 10 minutes. I said, I'm here to invite you back home. I said, I understand your questions and your, you know, being angry about this or that. And I said, I've had those too myself. But I came to the conclusion that there's no place else to go. And this is taken from the gospel. Jesus said, where else are you going to go? If you leave me, where are you going to go? And the answer is nowhere. I mean, there's nowhere to go. So I need to deal with this. And I said, Todd, I just want you to know. Now, this is so simple deal. This is so simple that anybody could do it. I said to him, I said, Todd, I just want you to know that God loves you. He looked in the rearview mirror and he said, thank you.
And that I said, fantastic.
And he has a plan.
Story.
He has a plan for your life. He does, Todd. He has a plan for your life. And I want to invite you back home to discover that plan. And I'd like to send you something. I said, if you give me your address, I'll send you a book. He said, all right. And so I got home, sent him a book, and I'm waiting right now as we talk. I'm waiting for him to write me back or call me.
And he will. You know, but it occurs to me some Catholics might have been tempted to say, and it would have been well-intentioned, do you realize you're in a state of mortal sin?
Uh-huh.
Now, again, that's well-intentioned. But your approach, which was to address the reasons why human beings want to become Christians, want to be active in their church, get excited about the Catholic version of that, that is to talk about God's love, God's acceptance, is going to work much more consistently than to make people feel worse than they already feel.
Right. It's totally. We're about proclaiming good news. And Pope Francis, I think, is embodying this.
I do. I agree with you completely.
He doesn't
walk up. He has gone out. He must have been naturally this way for many years. I mean, that he must have been the kind of guy who, in Argentina, just was friends with everybody, all kinds of people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, he's not walking up to homeless people on the street and saying, are you familiar with Dei Verbum?
Right. And he's not going up to homosexuals saying, are you familiar with the church's teaching on homosexuality as a sin?
No, he loves people, and he reaches out, and he loves them. You know, I had an encounter with a lady not too long ago. She was, by her own admission, a lesbian. And she came up to me, and she said, so you're a Bible teacher? And I said, yeah, I guess I am. And she said, so you probably think I'm going to hell. That's how the conversation started, Deal. And I said, well...
She probably, somebody probably said that to her at some point.
But I don't know if you're going to hell, but excuse me, let's start over. What was your name?
She
told me her name. And I told her my name, and she said, so you're probably against my lifestyle, aren't you? And I said, at that point, what are you talking about? And she said, I'm a lesbian. And I said, oh. And I said, well, whether I think you're going to hell or not is really not part of this conversation. I really don't have an opinion on that, to be honest with you. I don't know your heart, and I don't know your relationship with God or what you've done or haven't done or anything else, but I can tell you this. And then I went back to the basic message, and that was, I said, I'll let God judge you, you know, and you let God judge me, but I can tell you this. I think you're headed generally in the right direction. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, you're looking to be loved, right? She said, yeah. I said, I am too. And I said, I think God has the best for us, you know, when it comes to being loved, which is a man and a woman in marriage and so forth. And I said to her, I said, you know, just think about the possibility of that God may have more for you, you know, in your life. And we talked more about it. We don't go into it right
now. The point is, you made a friend.
I made a friend, and I told her, yeah. I said, I recognize your yearning for love. I recognize
right.
it. And then I pointed her to Jesus. You know, Jesus can change a lot of these circumstances. Jesus can change heart. But if I have to take it upon myself to change the heart of every person that I meet, I'm just not that good, Deal. I'm just not that good. But I do know that if I can get a relationship going with Jesus, he is that good. He really is.
Because the church, which is the body of Christ, is what converts people.
Right.
Not clever people, not even charismatic people. The church does it.
Right. Yeah. And this is a wonderful place. It's a family, and it's a broken family in many respects, but it's also the place where dinner is served and the word of comfort is there and direction.
And the prodigal son is welcomed home.
Exactly.
You know, there are so many basic stories in the Bible that I used to teach to my youth group when I was a minister in my young adult classes. You know, these such powerful stories, the prodigal son, the woman at the well, the Good Samaritan, they're all about forgiveness and acceptance. They're all about getting rid of legalism and Phariseeism. It's all about embracing people where they are and inviting them to go forward.
Right.
Yet, it's so simple and it's so true. But I must say that I've now been Catholic 30 years, and I very rarely run into a Catholic community, that is, a parish, where that is the dominant narrative.
Uh-huh.
It's another, well, I mean, I get, I'm always hearing about the sins of the flesh and masturbation and contraception and all the things that secularism has brought about, which is all true, but I'm not hearing the message of welcome, of forgiveness, of radical acceptance, and of God's love and of Christ's presence, even though we're there in His presence when we're at Mass.
Well, you know, you're familiar with the Holy Father's apostolic exhortation on the joy of the gospel.
Yes.
And in that incredible work, he talks about what to lead with first in evangelization. And you don't lead with doctrine and dogma
in
a relationship. There may be doctrine and dogma involved in what you're leading with, but you don't identify it as such, because people are not inspired by dogma. They're inspired by real answers in life.
Right.
And oftentimes the example has a bigger impact than the teacher. And he talks about that. But one of the powerful things he says is this. He says, yes, we do have dogmas and doctrines in our church. But he said, you lead with mercy, and you lead with kindness, and you lead with gentleness, and that's what becomes attractive. We don't go out and proclaim dogmas in the world. We proclaim Christ, who is merciful and gentle and kind and accepting of people. But that doesn't mean that people stay the same when they meet him, that he brings about that change. You know, as Paul said, one man plants, another waters, but God causes the increase. And I think sometimes, Deal, we make the mistake of thinking that we're the ones that cause the increase, or we think Jesus talked about the kingdom of God, and in terms of the church, you know, he talks about that it's like wheat growing up with weeds. Sometimes it doesn't look the way we want it to.
Exactly.
Weeds among us. But some of us are self-proclaimed weed-whacking ministers.
And some of us are good at seed planting like you are, Jeff.
Well, you know, we're not weed whackers, and the interesting thing about that is this, is that the weed, a lot of theologians identify that as what's called the darnel plant. The darnel plant looks identical to wheat when it's young, and you can only tell the difference when it becomes more mature. And if people around St. Augustine had a weed whacking ministry, they would have whacked him when he was young.
Yes.
We would have never experienced the man that God was building there.
That's really good. And here we've come to the end of our time, and you just brought up a fantastic example that I would love to spend another half hour on, St. Augustine's conversion and so forth. Jeff Cavins, thanks for being on Church and Culture today.
Oh, it's good to be with you, Deal.
To remind everyone, Jeff Cavins is the newly appointed Director of Evangelization in the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis. I hope that he and the Archdiocese will be preparing materials that other dioceses can use, hint, hint, hint. And if you will go to his website, jeffcavins.com,
You will see all the things Jeff and his wife Emily are doing, including these wonderful pilgrimages to the Holy Land coming up in January and May of next year, 2015. Thanks again, Jeff. And to all of you who are listening, please join us at this time next week.
If you have any comments or questions about church and culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
This program is made possible in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, dedicated to helping grow businesses for a strong community of faith and Christian values. CatholicBusinessPages.com is your online directory resource for connecting you with businesses that have taken a strong stand to support those values that impact our lives. If Christian principles make a difference in your life, then CatholicBusinessPages.com will link you to business professionals who care about the values of our nation. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Hi, this is Deacon Tom Lowy from Ave Maria Radio, and I'm looking for testimonies. If Ave Maria Radio has had an impact on your life, we'd sure like to hear from you. Tell us your story by going to the Ave Maria Radio homepage and click the My Story icon. Fill out the form and send it to us so we can celebrate together. Catholic radio is changing the world one soul at a time, but people need to hear how it happened from those whose lives have been changed. Go to mystory@avemariaradio.net.
The Ave Maria Radio app is available for all Apple and Android users. Listen to Ave Maria Radio live or listen to your favorite shows whenever you want, on demand. Like what you heard? Post a link on your email, Facebook, or Twitter account in just two taps. You can even leave a voice message on our feedback page. Purchase books or look up references from our hosts and guests, and it's all absolutely free. Just go to the App Store and type Ave. It's just that simple. The Ave Maria Radio app.
What do you get when you pair a former Apple software designer with folks who want to maximize efficiency in elder care? Join Mike Ferris next with Josh Fotheringham as they talk about using technology to help manage the caregiver's role. That's today on Homeschool Heartbeat.
Josh, how do you see Caring in Place being used by a homeschooling family?
Mike, our solution is free to all families. So it's as simple as going to our website, which is caringinplace.com, or accessing our apps that are available in both the iPhone store and the Android Play store. From there, a family member will go through our simple setup process, and it shouldn't take more than about 5 minutes or less to get set up. Then what Caring in Place does is we generate a care plan for you and for others who will be caring for your loved one. We'll teach you how to use your smartphone or your computer to become a care coordination expert. So imagine yourself creating a video with your iPhone and being able to teach siblings or neighbors or even church members how to populate mom's pillbox. This is something that caregivers feel like they are the only ones that are qualified to do this. They go to the appointments and meet with the physicians and understand the medications. But our solution provides that freedom and flexibility to have others involved. So you no longer have to be the only one caring for anyone. And with Caring in Place, caring becomes a community effort.
If you, like me, are in the midst of caring for elderly parents, you might find Caring in Place to be a very valuable resource. I'm Mike Ferris.
If you've appreciated this week's program on caring for your loved ones, you can find out more about Josh's mobile phone app, Caring in Place, at homeschoolheartbeat.com.
On the next...